This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Washington Watch. It is Thursday, May 19, in the year of our Lord, 2016, here in the greatest country in the history of planet Earth, the United States of America. We're talking faith, we're talking family, we're talking freedom this hour here, and what's going on, what's impacting your family, and what's impacting your future. Again, I am Ken Klukowski, Senior Director. Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs. My title is larger than I was even realizing for a second. At First Liberty Institute, which is the largest law firm in the United States exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans, check out what we're doing fighting for religious liberty for your family at firstliberty.org. Also, legal editor for Breitbart News Network, so exposing the deceptions of the liberal left and telling you news that the mainstream media is trying to hide. Check out what's really going on in your world at Breitbart.com. When I'm speaking at this microphone, though, I am not speaking for First Liberty Institute, for Breitbart News, or for that matter, for Washington Watch, all of whom do not endorse presidential candidates or any candidate for federal office. I am speaking as a citizen, as a husband, as a father, as a Christian, as an American, one who thanks God that I am blessed to be able to live in this wonderful country of ours, a place like no other on Earth. And we're going to be talking about what's going on in that country in this hour, and we want you to be sounding off as well. This show isn't just about us talking to you, telling you what's going on. It's about you telling us what's really going on, and you do that by sharing what's on your heart, letting us know at 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. We'll be taking your calls in the back half of the hour. We are going to be focusing today on what I think is the news of the day. In fact, started yesterday, but it's so big, it's the news of today again. And that is the full examination of the list of potential nominees that a President Donald J. Trump would make to the United States Supreme Court, someone whose decisions could be sitting on the bench for 20 or 30 years, past the next three or four presidents, and making decisions that indeed could endure for a century or more, impacting us and, in fact, even the next generation. It was breaking as we were on the show last night. We were looking at these names. We've all now analyzed that. We've now looked to it. But I'll tell you, before we get to that, breaking news out of Texas that I just have to share with everyone. Just absolutely phenomenal. I'm sure all of you are aware of the case United States versus Texas. This is where President Obama told the American people 24 times in nationally televised speeches that he lacked the legal authority to be able to just grant amnesty to millions of illegals living here, that it would take Congress to change immigration law, because Article 1 of the Constitution is explicit that Congress has absolute authority over immigration and naturalization in this country. Well, of course, the president tried for a couple years to browbeat Congress, and it didn't end up working. And then suddenly he discovered, after telling us 24 times that he didn't have the legal power to do this, he decided, oh, come to think of it, yes, I do. And he issued his executive order that resulted in what we call DAPA, this massive illegal executive amnesty under which more than 4 million illegal aliens are able to stay in this country indefinitely, maybe even permanently, receiving welfare benefits, receiving Obamacare, receiving tax refunds from the IRS from their years of undocumented illegal work in this country. Well, that case, of course, was a lawsuit challenging that, because this imposes enormous costs on the states. And so 26 states of the union, a majority of the states of this country, led by the great state of Texas, filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Texas on various grounds as to why the president's actions were illegal, how it violated Administrative Procedure Act, which is a federal statute, how it violates the Immigration and Nationality Act, another federal statute, and how it violates part of the U.S. Constitution. The states, the 26 states led by Texas, they won in the district court. They won at the U.S. Court of Appeals. And now this massive case is pending, was argued in March before the U.S. Supreme Court. But while it was pending there, all sorts of shenanigans came up during litigation. The judge became aware that it appears that Obama's U.S. Justice Department was not shooting straight with the court, and he had ordered them to provide all sorts of documents to see if they had been intentionally deceiving the court. I'm still getting the text of the exact order, but now Judge Hainan in the Southern District of Texas, this is a federal district court in the southern part of Texas, has now issued a ruling that the U.S. Justice Department lied, that they lied repeatedly, that they lied deliberately. He is sanctioning these lawyers. He is ordering the local lawyers can stay, but he is ordering all the attorneys from the U.S. Department of Justice from Washington, D.C., who are on the case. He is ordering them expelled from the case. They can no longer appear in his courtroom. And he is ordering them that they must attend mandatory legal ethics training and provide a certification to him and to his court showing that they have fully complied with being sent back to school to be taught about their legal ethics as lawyers, which I'll tell you, as a practicing constitutional lawyer myself, and we're about to have a guest on who's also a practicing lawyer, and I'm sure we'll all have a laugh about this. You know, this is one of the rules that you're taught pretty upfront in your legal ethics class in law school: don't lie to the judge. But evidently, these Obama Justice Department lawyers were unaware of that, and now Justice Hainan has come down on them like a ton of bricks. So, well, we're going to get commentary from our guest on this, as we also then turn to talk about again these names that Mr. Trump has put forward as his list from which he would be making a U.S. Supreme Court nomination to fill the Supreme Court seat left vacant by the untimely and very sad death of a legendary icon for conservatives, Justice Antonin Scalia. So to tackle both of these, we have with us Kelly Shackelford, the president and chief executive officer of First Liberty Institute, with whom I have the pleasure of working. Again, check out what he is doing, what we're all doing, fighting for your family at firstliberty.org. Kelly, thank you for joining us on Washington Watch.
I'm happy to do it.
Did you catch in that setup that breaking news out of Texas regarding Judge Hainan's order? Have you ever even heard of something like that happening before in a U.S. district court from federal prosecutors, from U.S. Department of Justice lawyers?
No, I mean, this is unheard of, which, you know, sends a signal of how outrageous their conduct must have been. I mean, for the judge to sit and for them to come in and say one thing, and then for them to go into other courts and say other things, and for the judge to see that and to see that they're completely lying to him, and to have to actually, you know, tell them that for the next, you know, 5 years they're going to go to ethics classes, and you know, this is not just some lawyer; these are the lawyers from the Justice Department in Washington, D.C. I mean, this is wow, what a message. And I think it tells you how out of whack our Justice Department is right now.
Yeah, I mean, your tax dollars at work to the 1 million people listening to this show, you pay the salaries for these lawyers that we're talking about. These people who just got body slammed by a federal district court for lying to him, and as he put it, that they were lying, that they kept lying, that they were repeatedly lying, and that they knew they were lying, you actually pay for these people. They work for Attorney General Loretta Lynch. And ultimately, they work for President Barack Obama. And, you know, the buck stops in the Oval Office. It's I guess this is kind of the tone that's been set by this administration, that for whatever reason, these line attorneys who are well-credentialed, well-trained people, these aren't people straight out of law school. I mean, these are serious attorneys who know what they're doing, and which makes it all the more egregious when they do something wrong. These are President Barack Obama's lawyers who now have to attend years of ethics training and have been expelled from this case by a federal judge because they were lying through their teeth to the federal courts. I'm sure this will be fascinating reading for the justices up the road here at the Supreme Court as they're still wrestling through the issues. on that Supreme Court appeal. Absolutely phenomenal. It's wow. Not only have I never seen that, I've never even heard of that. Kelly, I think this case is going to show up in the updates for legal ethics textbooks that are being used in classes nationwide after this. Would you agree?
Yeah, probably so. And as you say, the irony is this is going on while the Supreme Court is considering what to do with this case that was argued before it, I think, about a month ago. So, you wonder, do they know? And you think they probably will catch on to the fact that this has happened.
Well, you know, the U.S. Justice Department's only a few blocks from here, so I'll just go ahead and project this. Free advice to our fellow lawyers at the U.S. Justice Department. When you decide you are going to engage in an ongoing conspiratorial set of lies in federal litigation, make sure your case isn't pending before the U.S. Supreme Court when you're doing it. It might detract from your credibility with the justice. If they lied to the lower court, how do we know they're telling the truth to us? I would imagine some of the justices might be wondering about some of those things. All right. Well, some people had a bad day in the legal profession, and this is Team Obama, the Chicago way at work in terms of politics, culture, and of course now ethics or lack thereof. Turning the page, though, President Obama, praise be to God, will only be president for a few more months. And America's going to choose a new president this November. It looks increasingly like, almost certain, that it is going to be either Mr. Donald J. Trump or it is going to be Secretary Hillary Rodham Clinton. Eight more years, potentially, of Clinton's in the White House. And boy, so if you think today's ethics lapse are bad, just wait to see what we could be into. But it looks like if he would become president, Mr. Trump has put forth names as to who he would put on the U.S. Supreme Court. Kelly, we only have a couple minutes because we had this breaking news out of Texas that I wanted to cover. By what your reaction to Mr. Trump's judicial list?
Well, this is really unheard of as far as, number one, publishing a list. I mean, And not only that, but now we have a list, and this is a really solid list. Conservative judges who are known, and also very unusual, but not from the Washington, D.C.s and the New York cities and et cetera. These are people from across the country, states like Minnesota and Texas and Michigan and Colorado and Utah. And they're very well known. These are strong conservative individuals, the different judges. So very unusual. I mean, in fact, I was just thinking as we were about to talk that, you know, if you were to look back at Ronald Reagan, who he appointed, and mistakes made and things like that, I mean, you could very easily have a Donald Trump appointing better judges or justices than any of the past Republican presidents because they've gone through this process and kind of had, obviously, input from outside to say, hey, let's get some really good, solid judges that we don't have to worry about flipping on us once they get to the court. He might be better than anybody in the history because he's done this, and what a difference that nobody's done this before.
There's some serious rock star names on that list. Kelly, we are out of time because we did want to hit that Texas information. But thank you so much for coming on. Everyone, check out what Kelly's doing at firstliberty.org. We'll be right back right after the break.
Guess which founding father said this? Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. If you guessed George Washington, the father of our country, you were correct. That was just one quote in his farewell address to our country. Religion and morality, he said, are indispensable supports. That's a part of our Christian heritage. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. In September, we'll be going on our spiritual heritage tour to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and also a trip to Jamestown, Yorktown, and Williamsburg, Virginia. For any information you would like to have on these tours, please visit the website spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com. That's D.C. and Mount Vernon, Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We'd love to have you along in September.
I'm Mike Woolworth for Bible League International. We're in the midst of Open the Floodgates, our campaign to send 15,000 Bibles to Africa from the listeners of American Family Radio. Much of the church growth in Africa has happened without the presence of Bibles. In many regions, Christians have gone years without receiving their own copy of God's Word. This pastor shares the joy expressed by an 80-year-old senior upon receiving her very first Bible.
Remember the time when the old lady, about 8 years, then she received a Bible for the first time, and I could see the tears going through her cheeks and was happy to can have a Bible and to read it.
For only $5, you can send a Bible to a brother or sister in Christ in Africa. $50 sends 10 Bibles, $100 sends 20. Call 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD. Help Bible League International and American Family Radio reach our goal to send 15,000 Bibles to Africa. Call 800-YES-WORD.
God reached Michael Brown with faith in Christ when he was a 16-year-old drug-using rock and roller. With that faith, Dr. Michael Brown has devoted his life to spreading the gospel and sparking moral revolution.
Well, the world continues to go crazy all around us. I'm here to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity.
Dr. Brown has debated Jewish rabbis, agnostic professors, and gay activists, and is widely considered to be the world's foremost messianic Jewish apologist. Dr. Michael Brown will be one of the speakers this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plan soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
And America, we're back here at Washington Watch. We're going to be taking your calls in the next segment at 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. So if there's anything you're hearing on the air that you think has an impact on your family, be sure to be calling us in, telling us what you think about it. And if for some reason you think the stuff we're discussing does not impact your family, then you definitely need to call in, because you and I have to have a chat about that, and we should do it on the air. We're turning now to a distinguished constitutional scholar, one of the finest constitutional lawyers in America. Mr. Ed Whalen has a long and distinguished career in law, graduating from one of America's top law schools and clerking for the U.S. Court of Appeals, and then having the rare honor of serving as a law clerk for the legendary late Justice Antonin Scalia, one of the finest justices ever to sit on our nation's highest court. He also served as Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the Office of Legal Counsel at the U.S. Department of Justice during the Bush 43 administration. I'll tell you all that there are three elite legal teams in the federal government. One, of course, is the White House Counsel's Office. The other two are in the Justice Department. The Solicitor General, he and his team argue cases and represent the U.S. before the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Office of Legal Counsel. These are the really smart lawyers who tackle the most difficult and thorny legal issues to provide legal advice to the Attorney General and the President. So this is the AG's lawyer and the President's lawyer, and Ed Whalen was part of that distinguished team, one of the leaders of it, and his long and accomplished career have shown that that trust was well placed. Ed, it's great to have you on Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ken, and thanks for that generous introduction.
Well, you've more than earned it, my friend, and I'm so glad to have you. I'm going to ask you in just a moment to comment. I'd love your reactions on the news of the day with the potential nominees being put forth by Donald Trump to the Supreme Court if he would be elected president. But first, I know that you have been just a warrior when it comes to fighting against the lawlessness of the Obama administration. I want to know if you had just any quick comment from part of what we hit on the first segment, that this afternoon, District Judge Hannon in the Southern District of Texas ruled that the DOJ attorneys, the Justice Department attorneys in the 26-state immigration case, were deliberately and systematically lying to his court, that he ordered all of the Washington, D.C. lawyers on the case, ordered them expelled from the case, ordered their what lawyers call pro hac vice status rescinded, and has ordered them to attend years of mandatory legal ethics classes and submit certifications to the court indicating that they have completed this ethics training. Your reaction?
Well, it truly is extraordinary. I haven't followed the details of that case, but it's reflective, I think, of the deep, deep rot in this Justice Department, a rot that we've seen from the very outset, and it pervades the department. I think we see it especially in the Office of Civil Rights, which has been pursuing this lawless transgender agenda. I'm glad that some of this is being punished, but I tell you, there's so much more.
I hear you. You're not the only lawyer around town saying that. Ed, so to the bigger story as to where these matters ultimately end up at the U.S. Supreme Court, whether it's immigration or anything else, just wondering what your reaction was to Mr. Trump putting out this list yesterday.
Well, I think in the grand scheme, it's not a significant event, though I see that it's getting a lot of attention. Look, judges are the one issue, or one of the issues, I think, on which conservatives can reasonably hope that Donald Trump would be better than Hillary Clinton. How much probability you assign to that, how much weight you give it, is open to dispute. But this particular list itself, again, there are plenty of good names on it. There's some very good people who weren't on it and probably should have been. But Donald Trump said specifically that this is just a guide he would use, that these people are representative of the type of constitutional thinking he'd be looking for. I think it'd be a serious mistake to think that Trump himself put a lot of thought into this. I'm the same person who months ago was talking as though judges sign bills and do investigations. Clearly he got some decent advice from someone, and maybe that gives some hope that he would have decent advisors if he were elected, but
that he might surround himself with good people.
You know, he might not, and I don't think there's any particular assurance that anyone should take from this. I think the dilemma that a lot of us are in remains, and it would be, I think, naive to say, "Aha! You know, he's made some sort of commitment. He's going to be held to this." This is, a stronger reason to support him. Look, I respect that many people will end up there. I might end up there myself.
See, that was a question I was going to ask you. It's one of the things I love about Ed Whalen, and I think this is the mark of a great lawyer, is that he's a contrarian. If it's partly sunny out, he will note which clouds are in the sky and will indicate that he thinks if they're getting larger. And you never get into happy talk. You never get caught in the echo chamber. You always give that kind of pushback, and I think that's really important. In the 90s. Seconds we have left, what were the names you would like to see on that list that were not there?
Well, it's not so much that names matter. I mean, I'm not going, there are folks like Brett Kavanaugh, Jeff Stutton, Paul Clement, Neil Gorsuch, who would definitely be names on any list that I'd have. But my point isn't that he left off certain names. My point is that this whole list, issuance of this list, it just can't be particularly meaningful when we're dealing with someone like Donald Trump, who has displayed the character or lack thereof that he has. And we need to calculate that and trying to figure out what the prospects might be in a Trump administration. again, I readily acknowledge that the probability of getting good judges from him is greater than zero, whereas it's zero for Hillary Clinton. How you calculate that in the overall analysis, we're going to have to sort that out, and I just wouldn't read too much into what happened yesterday.
Ed, we've got 15 seconds left. So you are open to supporting Donald Trump. You're not there yet. Is there any one thing that he could do, or would this just be a vote against Hillary Clinton? We've got real fast.
Well, he could pick a good vice presidential candidate and promise to resign on his first day in office.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, the big news this week is likely to be FOMC, the Federal Reserve minutes. Janet Yellen, apparently a little more hawkish than was expected. We saw the markets turn negative after 2 o'clock, after the meeting, and that would stand to reason, because it's beginning to look like it's almost inevitable that rates are going to be raised. And it could be as early as June. Now, I don't think a June rate hike is likely. But Fed President Lacker from Richmond Fed indicated just today that it is time. And all indications are that the market is right, the news is right for a rate hike. Well, listen, this is going to be a political problem for the left. So for that, I guess I'm a little happy. But I am glad that rates are being hiked. I've been saying for 3 years, we need to start raising rates. Now, a lot of this might be to build some more ammunition for what is to come. A lot of this, obviously, is going to create a stronger dollar. A stronger dollar is being blamed by corporate America for their poor earnings, since so many companies are, in fact, multinational companies. But look, I believe in a strong dollar policy. We are not Japan. We're not China. We are not an export nation. We are a consumer-driven nation. Let's continue with our strong dollar policy. Let's begin to get normalized with interest rates so seniors can make a little something on CDs. And let's continue to watch the dollars from around the world flow in to U.S. Treasuries.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
And America, we are back. I'm Ken Klukowski, guest hosting here at Washington Watch. We are opening up the phone lines at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. This is your time to tell Washington, D.C. what they need to know and what's on your heart. This has been I've enjoyed the different perspectives we've had today thus far on the show. It's my colleague Kelly Shackelford. Praising Donald Trump's proposed list. In the first segment, my friend Ed Whalen, who, again, it's one of the things I really enjoy about Ed is how he always kicks the tires and a glass half empty kind of a guy, and that being the mark of a good lawyer, just someone who's been around the block politically and no one pulls the walls over his eyes. Obviously, not a fan of Mr. Trump, but acknowledging that If President Trump were to act on these names, he would be happy to see that, and he would have no thought that he could get such names out of Hillary Clinton. So we want to know what you think now. Let's go ahead and open it up. We are going to start with Charles in Ohio. Charles in Ohio, you're on Washington Watch.
Hey, I want to say two quick things. One, I think the list is great. You know, it'd be better if it was a contract in order to know if he got voted in, this is what's going to happen, because like your man said, Trump could change his mind, you know, quicker than the weather changes in Ohio. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is I hear a lot of anger, and right, justly, about the transgender bathroom thing, but I don't hear a whole lot about what people can do about that. I've caught snippets that I can call my local school and tell them that I'm not going to tolerate that. I'll pull my kids out and I'll do homeschooling. I think I can call the Justice Department, but I'd like to hear more people people that call in and you guys, you know, let us know, because I've never been big into politics. This is the first time I've stood for anything. And, you know, I'd like to find out more what I could do to stop this.
I think that's a great question, Charles. And I appreciate the fact that you're someone who wants to take a stand for, obviously, for your children and for your future. It's I'll tell you as a lawyer that the responses on this are the easiest solution is to elect a new president, because this all stems from a federal government, two agencies of the federal government responsible for administering part of some federal laws, some federal statutes that use the word sex as they refer to things you can't discriminate on the basis of, in just issuing an interpretation with the force of law saying that now they say sex includes whatever you choose to identify as. Now, of course, common sense would dictate, you know, words have meaning. They, you know, it's like you can't say that that's the definition of the word race, which also shows up in those statutes. You know, these words all have meanings. Those meanings are found, if nowhere else, in the dictionary. And that when Congress adopted these laws, starting in the 1960s, that when they referred to sex, they were talking about biological sex, that it comes from a set of chromosomes and that they produce certain body parts and that that's what they're identifying here. So the two choices would be one, three. All three branches of government can change this. If we get a new president, they can just reinterpret it back to the way that these words have always meant for the past 5,000 years. The second way is that Congress can pass a law specifying what the exact definition of those words are. Of course, the reality is this president would veto any bill that the current Congress would pass. So it either has to be a Congress with a new president, or it needs to be a Congress made so overwhelmingly conservative that it has a two-thirds vote to override a presidential veto. Or third, you just need good judges, judges who, as this is challenged in court, will say that the federal government's redefinition of these basic words is nothing short of Orwellian, that it is patently absurd, and that they are rejecting that definition. They have the power to do that as well. So in for those things to happen, you need to be involved. You need to be involved as a citizen and take care of your family. Be involved as a voter. Get engaged. Make 2016 a year where you're fighting for your children. Thank you, Charles. Moving now to Patrick from Texas. Patrick from Texas, you're on Washington Watch.
How you doing today, sir? Just want to say a couple of quick things. Thanks so much for taking my call. First time I've gotten on. Number one, I don't believe that Donald Trump is going to be the president. I like the way your one guest said it. If he says that he'll pick the right vice president and resign on day one. The reason is you need to have the courage of your convictions, and Donald Trump is a populist and a deal maker. He's always triangulating and calculating, so you can't find out where his convictions lie, and you can't determine that he'll actually have the courage to pull them up, actually honor them and pull through on them. Even during the debates and during the subsequent primaries and stuff, he said a few things in order to garner the vote, and then T-minus, 20 seconds later or the next interview, he changes his mind. So I'm pretty sure that a lot of people have buyer's remorse.
So, Patrick, who do you think will be the next president?
I think it's going to be Vice President Joe Biden. Here's why.
Well, not Hillary Clinton? You think he'll be Biden?
Not Hillary Clinton. Negative. And here's why. Joe Biden is the one who's really wrapped in the mantle of continuing what President Obama's been doing. And right now, the party establishment is with Hillary Clinton until they parachute in Joe Biden. They are using her right now, back in December.
She almost has the votes to win on the first ballot at the Democratic convention. Do you think she's not going to get to that magic number, or do you think they're going to change the party rules, like right at the convention, change the process?
No, they won't.
For voting,
no, they won't have to. The reason that Obama called Bernie Sanders in was to tell him to continue to a trip and have his campaign go on. They're going to show Hillary Clinton is wounded. Whether she's indicted or if it's leaked out by the FBI. She has been found, you know, in their investigation.
We just have 15 seconds left. So you think that even if she has the votes, that they will vote against her on the floor of the convention? Is that it?
No, it's going to go to the convention. The superdelegates are going to peel away. They're going to withhold the more that steam builds against her.
All right, Patrick, we appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for calling. We'll be back after the break.
Does the U.S. Senate have a responsibility to confirm anyone that President Obama nominates to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat? After the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, an intense political debate has emerged around this crucial question. The Constitution does not require conditions or limitations on the manner in which the Senate must act if the president nominates. Family Research Council believes that the Senate should not consider or deliberate on any nominee President Obama puts forward to fill Justice Scalia's vacated seat. This is because the president has consistently nominated Supreme Court justices and federal judges who view the Constitution as a malleable political instrument instead of a text with a defined meaning based on the consensus held by the Founding Fathers. To learn more about this critical issue, including 8 helpful questions and answers, visit frc.org/Supreme Court. That's frc.org/Supreme Court.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Hello, I'm Governor Phil Bratton, and it's my pleasure to invite American Family Radio listeners to the great state of Mississippi. Through music, literature, food, and art, Mississippians want to tell their story and draw you into the beauty of our home. While you're here, travel along miles of hiking and biking trails, experience our rich history by touring museums and historic homes, discover authentic music and the birthplace of the blues, explore the beaches of our beautiful Gulf Coast. Go to visitmississippi.org for all the wonderful attractions the Magnolia State has to offer.
Can one Bible change a life? This is Mike Woolworth for Bible League International and our joint campaign with American Family Radio to send 15,000 Bibles to Africa. Which one of these common $5 items will help a person in Africa find eternal life? A pair of $5 earrings, a $5 cell phone case, or a $5 Bible? Of course, the answer is a $5 Bible. However, $5 is out of reach for millions of Africans who live on next to nothing. Here's where you can help. Your gift of just $5 at 800 Yes Word provides a Bible to someone in Africa. Imagine helping someone in Africa find faith in Jesus Christ. That's exactly what you'll do when you call 800 Yes Word and give $5 to send one Bible, $100 to send 20, or $1,000 to send 200. But with only a few weeks left in our campaign to send 15,000 Bibles, we need your help today. Call 800 Yes Word, 800 Yes Word, or go to afr.net.
And America, we're back. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting at Washington Watch. It's been a fantastic show so far today, talking with Kelly Shackelford about religious liberty, about Donald Trump's pick for the U.S. Supreme Court, talking with Ed Whalen, one of the finest constitutional lawyers in the country, given a contrary perspective, and hearing your voices as you all are sounding off on this. We're going to turn now to a friend of mine and another expert on the U.S. Supreme Court. Kerry Severino is chief counsel with the Judicial Crisis Network, which is perhaps the foremost organization in the United States that is focused on getting good constitutionalist judges on the federal bench at all levels, and most especially the U.S. Supreme Court. She herself, a graduate of one of America's top law schools and then a law clerk for a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, and then clerked for the most consistently principled originalist, the staunchest conservative on the U.S. Supreme Court, my personal hero, Justice Clarence Thomas. And Kerry had the distinct honor to be able to serve for a year at our nation's highest court under such an extraordinarily gifted and valuable jurist. Kerry, thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. I know these are busy times for you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I've seen you all over TV. I've heard you on radio. Everyone wants to know your thoughts on these things, and I'd love to get it too. The story from yesterday that we're still talking about today the 11 names that Donald Trump has put out there as his starting point for finding a successor to fill the seat of the legendary Justice Antonin Scalia if he should defeat Hillary Clinton to become the 45th president of the United States. Before we get there, I'm going to do the same thing that I did with Kelly and Ed, and that is that in the past couple hours, the U.S. District Court judge in Texas who had the 26-state immigration case has handed down an order like I've never seen today where he has found that DOJ's lawyers on the case from Washington, D.C. were lying to him, that they were lying repeatedly, systematically, and over a period of time. He has ordered all of them, all the non-local DOJ attorneys, expelled from the case and barred from the bar of that court, and have to attend now years of mandatory legal ethics training and certify to the court that they have completed this lengthy regimen on legal ethics. Just want to get your quick reaction to that.
Oh, wow. You're right. That is really unusual. And in this case, I followed some of the things they've done so far. They have good reason, because they've had repeatedly issues with these lawyers saying, for example, the court says you can't carry out this law. It's not, it's stayed. And they'll continue doing it anyway. And then they'll tell the court they're not. And then it turns out later, oh, they are. You can't, as a lawyer, make those kind of false claims to a court and expect to get away with it. They really did.
Yeah, I mean, I was taught that in legal ethics. I assume that you were too. I mean, one of the things, we didn't spend a lot of time on it in class because it didn't require much elaboration. It was, by the way, don't lie to the judge, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's basic, right? But judges don't take it well, and I'm pleased to see it finally has come around to them, because you can't allow the Department of the Justice, and they actually should have a higher standard. My husband used to work in the Department of Justice. The way the department used to carry itself out, they did kind of hold themselves to a higher standard because they are the government's lawyer. But unfortunately, you saw people in this case who were more hired guns than a higher standard, and that's really sad.
Well, when you have a president who can say what he says to, I mean, in the case of this very litigation, a president who told us 24 times, I can't do this, I don't have the legal authority to do it, then when Congress doesn't change the law, he just reverses himself, says, no, I have the power to do this after all. I guess when you have a chief executive who acts that way, it kind of sets the tone for the whole administration in terms of, if he doesn't have to tell the truth, why do I? Turning to the Supreme Court, I would love to get your reaction off Mr. Trump's releasing this list yesterday of 11 potential Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, no, I when we heard he was going to have a list, everyone, I think, was worried, because the first thing he said, back months ago when he was asked about the Supreme Court, was to mention his sister, who would not be a good nominee. She's a very she's a liberal judge. She, in particular, has a very liberal opinion on partial birth abortion. And people thought, oh, that's crazy. And then he went back and he mentioned people like Bill Pryor and Diane Sykes, who are great picks. What we saw from his list that came out yesterday is more of the Pryor and Sykes. It was absolutely a stellar list. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was a short list I could have been very happy producing myself. It has a lot of great judges, rising stars in the conservative legal movement. And it's really interesting. He looks not only to federal appellate courts, which I think everyone's used to looking at, but also state Supreme Courts, which is often overlooked. There's some great judges out there in the states. And looking at people on state Supreme Courts, you can get a much better view of their real opinions, because they're not having always to defer to Supreme Court precedent. There are issues in which they are the last word, and now you'll find out how they really behave in a Supreme Court.
I'm glad you're raising that point, because it's been a while since we've had a justice who had been a state Supreme Court justice. What kind of perspective do you think a person with that background would bring to the nation's highest court?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just seeing how they really behave when they're the last voice. A lot of these other judges, they can say, oh, well, I had to apply precedent here, this is why I ruled that way. Here you get to see this is really what their philosophy is. And some of them, if you've gotten a chance to see their real textualist and originalist bona fides as a result. You have people like Diane Sykes, who ran, even before it was cool, right, as a constitutional conservative for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. She's now a federal judge in the Seventh Circuit. but people who have really stood up for that when they're interpreting their state constitution. So that's really the biggest and most important job of the federal Supreme Court, is interpreting the Constitution. So now you get to see someone doing that themselves. Great.
Yeah, it looks like, and it looks like Donald Trump, when he mentioned his sister originally, who's a federal appeals judge on the Third Circuit, yeah, I saw a follow-up interview where he says, look, I mean, obviously I've known my sister my whole life. I love my sister. You know, she's a wonderful person. I'm always going to say nice things about my sister. So the fact that she's not on the list may perhaps be a sign that, sure, it's in an earlier interview, he was given a shout-out to his sister because he loves her. But just because he loves her doesn't mean he necessarily thinks that she should be sitting on the U.S. Supreme Court, given the things mm-hmm. that the court is deciding. Now, you, as a former law clerk to, again, a personal hero of mine, Clarence Thomas, you have to be thrilled that I am looking, out of 11 potential justices, I am looking at no fewer than three who were also, like you, a law clerk to Justice Thomas. We've got, looks like we've got Thomas Lee on the Utah Supreme Court. We've got Allison Eade on the Colorado Supreme Court. And of course, a hero to many conservatives, David Strauss on the Minnesota Supreme Court. Any particular thoughts on your fellow Thomas alumni?
Well, I'm thrilled to see that Thomas has become a feeder judge. Normally, you don't.
A feeder judge to his own court.
Right. Exactly. I know he'd be thrilled to be sitting on the court with one of his former clerks, because he still stays very close to the clerks. But I also think that illustrates the kind of approach to the law that you are seeing from people on this list. It's people who view respect to the Constitution above all else. That means they're not looking, they have their finger in the wind and see what public opinion is going to say. They're not, you know, trying to rewrite it and think, well, what would I do if I were a politician? They're just, they took an oath to the Constitution and they're going to fulfill it. And I think the fact that he is their mentor really speaks volumes.
I should tell our listeners, I've written an analysis for Breitbart News on this. You can all go to Breitbart.com right now. It's right on the front page. It looks like it's absolutely on fire, looking at the number of tweets and Facebook shares and comments going on with it. So about my piece about how it looks like, and I like Carrie Severino's reaction on this, that I think in putting out a list like this, that Donald Trump is presenting a clear choice to the American people in terms of one issue where the two parties would be very far apart between him versus Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people I know who are concerned about a Trump candidacy, they don't know what, you know, they're concerned about some of his policies or some of the changes of policies he's had. This is the one reason I think a lot of people are really saying this is the most important issue, whatever else issues I may have, if I cannot have Hillary Clinton appointing the next, not just Justice Scalia's replacement, but maybe two or three additional justices for the Supreme Court. She could be transforming the court, and we know the kind of judges that she says she'd like to put on the court, because she's talked about it very clearly, and she wants people.
Yeah, tell our listeners about that. Absolutely. I think they need to see that kind of contrast.
No, she wants people who are going to undermine the First Amendment. She's not a fan of religious freedom. She's not a fan of political speech. She wants people who are going to undermine the Second Amendment. She wants to have more of the same of the president's limitations on gun use, and probably would want to overturn the Heller decision. That's a big 5-4 case written by Justice Scalia that said you do have an individual right to bear arms. There's a lot of people out there, including, I think, four justices in the court now, who don't think that's the case. She wants people to be overturning voter ID laws. She wants someone who's going to be not only a champion of Roe versus Wade, but expanding the limits that the government puts on even rational regulation of abortion, of just health-based concerns and stuff. She would be absolutely fighting for that. So there's an incredible list of things. And she's talked about, you know, Obamacare and the president's executive action as things that she thinks the court should be green lighting. But that's the kind of judges you're going to see Hillary Clinton put up. That's the kind of judge, frankly, that Judge Garland, who President Obama has nominated, would be on the court. So is that what we really want for, you know, the next 20, 30 years on the court? It's a kind of a frightening prospect to think of.
Well, and everyone, I think, should check out the work that that Carrie is doing at Judicial Crisis Network. When Justice Scalia tragically passed, So many people thought it was a foregone conclusion that President Obama was surely going to be filling that seat. And Judicial Crisis Network and Carrie Severino was one organization and one individual that charged right into the breach and said, no, I think there should be no hearings. I think there should be no votes. I don't care who the nominee is. This is a presidential election year. The direction of our republic hangs in the balance in the American people. The Supreme Court has functioned at times in the past for a year or more with a seat open, and we think the American people need to be able to debate this issue and then tell Washington, D.C. through their votes in November what kind of justice they want on the Supreme Court. Carrie, it looks like you're delivering on that.
You know, it's amazing to see the solidarity that the Republican senators have had on this issue, and I think it's because they realize how high the stakes are, too. Because all of, you know, any legislation they pass, all of these executive shenanigans the president's pulling, everything that goes out of the government ultimately has to go through the Supreme Court, and that could stop things. It can rewrite the laws that you spend all this time trying to get passed that are good laws. So it's so important to have the Supreme Court in solid hands, and I'm very grateful that the Republican senators have held firm, and I think there's even a lot of Democrat senators who are pretty grateful that we're not having votes on this, because they don't want to have to admit that they're siding with an anti-gun, you know, pro-EPA, pro-big labor, all of these groups that Judge Garland just reflexively defers to, the bureaucratic agencies, rather than some of the actual Constitution or the laws in the case. So that's something that I think makes it that I think we'll have at least till November to have this seat open. And I would hope that regardless of what happens in the election, I think Americans have to realize that we can't afford to have someone on the court that's going to be misinterpreting the Constitution, because the Supreme Court affects every aspect of our lives now. Government's grown so big, it's gotten into all of our lives, which is not how it should have been. But now that it is, we need a court that's willing to uphold those limits and push it back where it belongs.
And in contrast to the kind of justice that you say we do not want to have, in addition to these three former Clarence Thomas law clerks that I'm looking at, some interesting choices here. In the time we have left, we have, as you mentioned, Judge Diane Sykes, a former Wisconsin Supreme Court justice who now sits on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. Of course, Judge Sykes, the author of two of the most respected Second Amendment decisions coming off Heller. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Heller there. So someone who's taken a very broad view of the right to keep and bear arms as a fundamental right. Also someone who is who wrote one of the decisions stopping the Obamacare abortion pill mandate. I assume you're a fan of Judge Sykes?
Right. No, absolutely. Again, I religious freedom on the Second Amendment. She's great. He's got another one. Judge Hardiman also has had a great Second Amendment decision, Drake versus Philco. So it's almost like you could go down the line of all the things that worry us about Judge Garland, and there's someone on here who has a grave opinion standing up and stating it correctly. You know, you've got Judge Pryor had a great decision in a case very much along the lines of Little Sisters of the Poor with EWTN, the Eternal Word Television Network, and it was the same issues. He wasn't in the prevailing opinion on the case, but he decided it correctly. You have a lot of people who went and had a case that maybe was a, you know, people were all saying, oh, this is going to be awkward if people lose this, the plaintiffs are so sympathetic, but they went with the law and what the law says rather than what all newspapers were saying. I think those are excellent, excellent traits.
And some of the decisions that Carrie's referencing there from Judge Hardiman and others, I actually quote in my Breitbart piece that I'd encourage all of you to look at. Trump's SCOTUS list gives America a clear choice. In the few seconds that we have left, 30 seconds, I'm looking at Justice Don Willett from the Texas Supreme Court, who is an inveterate tweeter. It looks like he poked fun at Donald Trump once, saying that Darth Vader was saying, we're going to rebuild the Death Star and make the rebels pay for it. I think it's a positive mark for Donald Trump that he would take someone who gave him a hard time like that, put him on the list. Carrie, we're so glad that you joined us. God bless, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.